ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
G'day, welcome to the world today. It's Friday, the 19th of December. I'm Nick Grimm, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, thousands gather at Bondi to remember those killed, reclaiming the beach after the shooting tragedy. And a hero's farewell, the funeral for the couple who died confronting the gunman as they began their rampage.
Even in the final moments of their lives, they show the depth of who they were, facing those moments with courage, selflessness, and love.
First, the Prime Minister has declared a day of reflection is to be held on Sunday, exactly 1 week after the Bondi attack. Anthony Albanese is asking Australians to observe a minute's silence to remember the victims, with flags on government buildings to be flown at half-mast. He's also encouraging people right across the country to light a candle at precisely 6:47pm, the moment the attack began.
This day is about standing with the Jewish community, wrapping our arms around them, and all Australians sharing their grief. It is a moment to pause, reflect, and affirm that hatred and violence will never define who we are as Australians.
In another major development, the PM has also announced a national firearm buyback scheme will be implemented, the largest since the one put in place by the Howard government in the wake of the Port Arthur massacre almost 30 years ago. Firearms surrendered as part of the scheme will be destroyed in a process overseen by Australian Federal Police. It follows the decision by National Cabinet to limit the number of firearms that can be owned by any one individual. Community tensions, meanwhile, have been heightened today with news that New South Wales police have arrested seven men with extremist Islamic ideology in an operation that unfolded in Sydney's southwest at Liverpool. Police say the men had travelled from Victoria and officers took swift action over concerns a violent act was possibly being planned and the group might have been en route to Bondi. Intelligence sources have confirmed one of the seven men arrested has been under investigation by the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, ASIO. It comes as more funerals are being held today, including that for Boris and Sophia Gurman, the couple who had emerged had acted so heroically on Sunday, bravely attempting to stop the gunman at the outset of the attack, but who both were killed doing so. Reporter Alison Shaw is in Sydney's eastern suburbs. As mentioned, Boris and Sophia Gurman are being farewelled today. Alison, what more can you tell us?
Nick, it's been a difficult day for the family of Boris and Sophia Gurman and the tight-knit Sydney Jewish community. Many mourners arrived to this memorial hall in Sydney's east, where I am now, to farewell the couple. Some of them were carrying flowers, many were hugging each other as they walked in, and one woman I saw was draped in an Israeli flag with the love heart drawn around the Star of David. Of course, Sophia and Boris Gurman were killed when they were trying to intervene before the first bullet was fired in Sunday's terror attack at Bondi Beach. In video that's been circulating on social media, listeners may have seen 69-year-old retired mechanic Boris Gurman wearing a purple shirt, grabbing the older shooter, 50-year-old Sajid Akram, and they both fell to the ground. And the video shows Boris Gurman managing to briefly disarm the shooter on the side of the road on Campbell Parade near the footbridge. But Boris Gurman and his wife, Sophia, who would have celebrated her 62nd birthday on Wednesday, both died in this attack, and their bravery and heroism has very much been celebrated this week by many in Australia and across the world. Today, during the eulogy, Rabbi Yehoram Yulman said that the couple had moved from Ukraine to Sydney after their son Alex was born and that they had left behind familiarity and certainty to begin their lives again in Sydney. And they lived in Bondi and were often perplexed when people would talk about wanting to go overseas when their paradise was at Bondi Beach. And he said that Boris and Sophia were great partners that shared a sense of humour as well, and that they understood when to push each other further and when to steady each other. Here's a little bit of what Rabbi Yehoram Yulman said at the memorial today.
Even in the final moments of their lives, they show the depth of who they were, facing those moments with courage, selflessness, and love. In doing so, they reminded us that they were not only devoted parents and partners, but in every sense of the word, heroes.
Nick, there are also two other funerals being held today for Boris Chetleroyd and Edith Brutman, who were both killed in Sunday's attack.
Meanwhile, Alison, while we have you, what more can you tell us about the arrests that have taken place in Liverpool?
Well, Nick, this was a major police operation that occurred last night in Liverpool in Sydney's southwest. Police first confirmed that they had rammed two cars over fears that they may have been heading to Bondi Beach, and there were dramatic photos and videos of armed tactical officers arresting these seven Victorian men who had travelled from interstate, who are known to authorities. And police said that they were concerned about why the men were travelling to Sydney and believed that they were potentially on their way to commit violence. Now, details are still relatively scant, but we have heard from a senior New South Wales police officer who confirmed that the seven men do have ideological links to the two Bondi gunmen. New South Wales Police Deputy Commissioner Dave Hudson says that the only weapon that was found in the vehicles was a knife and that there were no guns. But when asked when the men had links to extremist Islamic ideology, Deputy Commissioner Hudson said that is our belief at this stage yet. But he also said that the men don't have definitive links to the two Bondi gunmen. Let's hear a little bit from him now.
We have some indication that Bondi was one of the locations they may be visiting yesterday, but I, with no specific intent in mind or proven at this stage. However, we don't have definitive links between the individuals who committed these atrocities on Sunday and these yesterday, apart from potential commonality in some thinking, but no associations at this stage.
Deputy New South Wales Police Commissioner Dave Hudson then, and before him, our reporter Alison Shaw. Amid the ongoing grief, there have been moments that have brought people together in a spirit of unity and support for the victims and their families. This morning, thousands gathered on Bondi Beach to honour the lives of those lost to the gunman's bullets. Close to the scene of the mass shooting, swimmers and surfers took to the water in an attempt to reclaim their beloved beach and wash away the stain of violence that has been left upon it. Reporter Tanya Dendrinos was there.
Bondi Beach was at its sparkling best this morning, a far cry from the horrors that took place here less than a week ago.
I came out here to support everybody who had to witness Bondi's massacres. And yeah, it was a really heartfelt and purposeful and important thing to come out here today. It helped soothe the hurt.
Thousands gathered in solidarity with the Jewish community, lining the sand as organiser David Solsky addressed them.
Let us lead the change we want to see in Australian society, and let us make sure that we never ever see a heinous act like this again on our beautiful Bondi shore. Thank you.
In their droves, swimmers and board riders then took to the water. It was an emotional and impressive display as they formed an enormous circle, holding a minute's silence before moments of uplift. The foreshore was packed with community members too, watching on, united. David Solsky says it marks the start of the healing process.
When I heard that whistle go and then the silence and then them starting to splash, it was a special moment for the community, and yeah, I just felt very proud of everybody.
Trent Knox helped to organise the paddle out too.
I think it was an opportunity for people to let go, and you know, if they need to cry, I need to scream, I need to yell, and just I guess allow the last week to pass through. And I don't know what the official count was, but I'd say it was probably in excess of 2,000 people, which, you know, I've never seen anything like it in Bondi, and I'm not sure I ever will again.
The power of the moment not lost on those who took part.
Out there, you know, it was incredibly emotional. You look around and you can see some people with tears in their eyes, so obviously it's a way for them to reflect and it's impacted them, but it's just incredible to see people from all walks of life out there, arm in arm, in the water that we love.
When you paddle out like that, there's this mass of humanity all amalgamating in one spot, and then people hold hands just organically. It's this quite a spiritual experience.
So beautiful, healing. Do you see how beautiful that was? Just to see the outpouring of love and emotion and support for the Jewish community today.
Rabbi Yosef Eichenblatt says it speaks directly to the heart of the Jewish community.
It was extremely heartwarming and healing to see, you know, the outpouring of love and support for the Jewish community. It's a reminder that Australian society, for the most part, is what we had hoped it is. And we'll be okay. And Australia has a bright future ahead. But we can't be complacent.
Rabbi Yosef Eichenblatt ending that report by Tanya Dendrinos. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has rejected calls to recall Parliament next week to push through new hate speech laws in response to the Bondi terror attack. That includes the federal government announcing new reforms to crack down on anti-Semitism, including increased penalties for preachers who spread hate or promote violence. The Shadow Immigration Minister has also called for further changes that would allow the government to strip a person's Australian citizenship. Kathleen O'Connor reports.
On Monday, the federal government announced plans to strengthen Australia's gun laws in the wake of the Bondi shooting. After resisting calls for more action on anti-Semitism, like holding a royal commission, the Prime Minister made a rare admission.
I, of course, acknowledge that more could have been done, and I accept my responsibility for the part in that as Prime Minister of Australia.
By the end of the week, Anthony Albanese shifted to a more comprehensive clampdown on hate speech.
The Attorney-General and Minister for Home Affairs will develop a package of legislative reforms to crack down on those who spread hate, division and radicalisation.
Among the proposed changes, new federal offences for those spreading hate or promoting violence. But the detail on what will be deemed hate speech is limited. Tony Burke is the Minister for Home Affairs.
There will be a limit as to how much of this is dealt with under federal law, how much is dealt with under state law, and that's what we're now working through in terms of our limits.
Extra powers will also be given to government to cancel or reject visas for anyone it deems a threat. Matt Thistlethwaite is the Assistant Minister for Immigration and Foreign Affairs and Trade.
We've already used that power on several occasions. I've personally denied people a visa to come to Australia where they've publicly espoused anti-Semitic views. I've been involved in cancelling the visas of people who are already in Australia because they've been involved in anti-Semitic activities.
Shadow Minister for Immigration Paul Scar says the reforms should go further.
We would expand the elements which would trigger that power to actually strip Australian citizenship from a dual citizen. But this would only apply where someone has a citizenship of another country as well as Australian citizenship.
Opposition leader Susan Lee is calling for Parliament to resume as early as next week to rush through the legislation.
We will work with the government, of course we will, but we need to recall the Parliament urgently.
Calls Prime Minister Anthony Albanese rejected today at Parliament House.
No, it's not practical. And I suspect that the opposition leader knows that that's not the case. We want to make sure that we get the laws right.
Special advisor to the Australian National Imams Council, Bilal Rao, says he thinks the Prime Minister is doing a good job in trying to keep the country united, but needs to be careful the new reforms don't create other long-lasting issues.
One thing that, for instance, the report completely fails to do is clearly distinguish what is anti-Semitism and when is criticism of Israel and what it is doing in Palestine, and when is that not anti-Semitism? For example, at the moment, it adopts a very broad definition and leaves unanswered that point of distinction.
For many in the Jewish community, it's a welcome step, but one coming far too late. Alex Rivchin from the Executive Council of Australian Jury spoke on Nine.
We need to see the detail of how the government intends to actually enforce it and implement it, and what the laws will look like, because what we tend to see is the rhetoric and the talk of government being at one level, and then things start to get diluted and watered down by political practicalities and factions and all those sorts of things. So you just wonder what the actual outcome of it will be.
Alex Rivchin from the Executive Council of Australian Jury, ending that report by Kathleen O'Connor and Miwa Bloomer. Thanks for joining us here on The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. You can subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just do a search on The World Today. Turning overseas now, and a top secret Australian Defence Force operation has been underway in Poland this month, delivering retired Australian tanks to Ukraine. The M1A1 Abrams tanks are vulnerable to attack by Russian drones, but Ukraine insists they will make a difference as Moscow's forces continue their full-scale invasion. Europe Bureau Chief Mazowie Ford was granted exclusive access as part of the ADF operation to deliver the tanks.
On a bleak winter's day in Poland, I arrive at a secret location where a classified Australian Defence Force operation is underway. Australia's gifted 49 of its retired M1A1 Abrams tanks to Poland's war-torn neighbour Ukraine. That's no secret. But the details of the huge logistical effort to move them across the world have been tightly under wraps until now. The first 37 tanks arrived in July. The ABC was given exclusive access last week as Australian tank specialists checked over the final 12. Colonel James Smith leads Operation Kudu, the ADF's commitment to training for the armed forces of Ukraine.
It is a huge undertaking to bring a 60-tonne tank, you know, halfway across the world and make sure when we hand it over, it's ready for use.
Five of the team spent 55 days at sea to bring the armoured vehicles from Geelong to Europe. Lance Corporal Jordan Upton was on board.
It was kind of scary. I've never experienced a trip like that, especially on a commercial cargo vessel as well. But now, being here, I'm pretty proud that we were able to achieve it.
At their pop-up maintenance hub, the Australians spent a week doing final maintenance.
What are you guys actually doing here?
So daily checks, including oils, track work, maintenance inside the turret, optics, weapon systems, that sort of thing.
Tank commander, Lieutenant Mitchell Walker, showed me around.
This one here, actually, this ARN, was the final tank I finished my tank officer's course on last year. And it's good to see it off just one last time. I know it's going to do its job. It worked well for me last year and it's still going well at this point.
Tanks have been into battle for decades, but warfare has changed. A multi-million dollar tank can be taken out by a drone worth just a few hundred dollars. Even so, Ukraine has specifically requested the aging Abrams and says they will make a difference. Colonel James Smith again.
There's no doubt that a 60-tonne tank with 120mm gun on it, it still has a significant impact on the battlefield.
Dr. Simon Anglum is from the Department of War Studies at King's College London.
The old M1A1 Abrams, it's still one of the best tanks in the world and it's still better than anything that the Russians have got. But it does have a weakness, which is that the armour on top of the turret and the hull is not as strong as it could be.
Ukraine has previously modified tanks with extra armour and anti-drone cages.
These have apparently proven highly effective because they'll detonate the warhead before it can actually hit the top of the tank and destroy it.
The final leg of this classified operation was a rail journey across Poland. Now, Australian tanks that have never seen combat are making their way to the front lines of Ukraine. This is Mazowie Ford in Poland, reporting for The World Today.
Back home, as the weather heats up and Australia heads into the thick of summer, the fire season is also taking off. Today, total fire bans are in place for West Victoria and across the border into South Australia, with fires burning in Western Australia. Julia Bergen reports.
A heat wave is stretching across the country. Temperatures are set to soar above 40 degrees in some places, and there's bushfires in multiple states. In Western Australia, on the Midwest coast, fire crews have been battling a number of blazes. Guy Sims is the Kuru Shire president.
There was a very rapid response to this fire. We had graders and farmer response units here very, very quickly, as well as brigade vehicles.
In northeast Victoria, a grass fire has burned through more than 1,500 hectares and destroyed property. The cause? Farm machinery. Wangaratta Incident Controller Lockie Gales says this is a warning for the coming days.
Today is not our friend with fire weather either. We've got, again, high temperatures, low relative humidity. The wind won't be what we had yesterday, but it's still a day for extreme caution.
Today, total fire bans are in place for Victoria's West, the same locations that last summer were ravaged by catastrophic bushfires. Gary Cook is the Deputy Chief Officer for Victoria's Country Fire Authority.
We've had a really hot few days, so the fuels up there have become really dry.
so the grassland's really dry. If there was any moisture in them, that's been sapped out. Very low humidity. So the dangers are there.
He says while many of these areas burned last summer, spring rain has set it up to burn all over again. There's plenty of grass growth, but water levels in dams and creeks are low, and that means limited water for fighting fires.
We've put in place a supplementation program this year where we've got 19 bulk water carriers on contract for the summer period to assist firefighters get water to the fire ground. So it's inevitable that we will have fires. I mean, it happens because of the dryness that occurs with summer in Victoria every year.
West Victoria is not the only hotspot. The Australian and New Zealand Council for Fire and Emergency Services has also put southwestern Australia and north New South Wales on high alert for the summer season. As communities are urged to prepare for the summer ahead, firefighters are gearing up for increasingly dangerous conditions.
There's more fire. The fires are getting more intense.
David Bowman is Professor of Pyrogeography and Fire Science at the University of Tasmania.
The bush is burning hotter and it's very stressed. Because it's stressed, it burns hotter. The trees are getting damaged. You get more fire. You get more damage. Trees can fall. The bottom line is we've got to understand that firefighters, both on the ground and in the air, are taking really, really serious risks.
This month, three people across the nation have died trying to fight fires, two of those deaths due to falling trees. David Bowman says it's a timely reminder that the dangers are ever present.
That report from Julia Bergen and Kimberly Price. They're known as the vacuum cleaners of our inland waterways, but River Murray native freshwater turtles have been in significant decline for decades. Their population is down by up to 91%. Now, Indigenous rangers, environmental groups and scientists are teaming up for a turtle management strategy to try and ensure their survival. Jessica Schremer reports.
Raiding out to trap native freshwater turtles. Associate Professor Deborah Bauer and her research team are monitoring the troubled species. But sightings in South Australia's River Murray are rare.
One in three Australian freshwater turtles is threatened with extinction. And the three species that we have here in the Lower Murray, the broad-shelled turtle, the eastern longneck and the Murray River turtle, are all threatened in various parts of their range.
Known as the vacuum cleaners of rivers, there's a feeling these turtles have been underappreciated. It's a view shared by Sylvia Clark from SA State Authority, the Murraylands and Riverland Landscape Board.
Turtles, they're a bit of out of sight, out of mind, because they spend most of their time in the water. They're not something that's obvious to us. And even with governments and councils bringing that to people's attention, that even though you don't see something, it's still there and we still need to care.
The biggest threats to the reptiles' populations are habitat loss, river regulation, drought and predation.
In some places, 100% of their nests get dug up by foxes, and that means the young ones just aren't getting in the system.
Sylvia Clark is part of a team of experts developing South Australia's first turtle management plan to try to help the native species recover. In addition to habitat monitoring and population tracking, detection dogs are being used to protect turtle eggs from foxes. Handler Fiona Jackson is training her canines to sniff out nests, which once found are shielded with mesh and wire.
They have this incredible technology on the end of their nose. Estimates are that the dog's sense of smell is anywhere between 10,000 and 100,000 times better than our sense of smell. If something is hard for us humans to spot, then that's where the dog's sense of smell can really come in to help a project. And so for turtle nests, they'll be able to seek out these nests that otherwise would blend into the environment.
Turtles also carry important cultural significance for First Nations people, like Nintaid and Ngangaruka woman Auntie Cheryl Charles.
They are in our dreaming. They are our knowledge keepers. They are our scientists, our environmentalists. They are everything in culture. They were a part of the food, a part of our dreaming, a part of the law.
Ranger Lucy Sumner from the River Murray and Mallee Aboriginal Corporation is helping to educate young people about turtle conservation.
I want them to walk away with the knowledge of the three turtles and why it's important that we keep their wetlands and any area that they inhabit and breed, keep it protected from foxes and any other predators that are around. And if they see one, if it needs help, help it.
It's a valuable lesson for children like Year 6 student Evan Smythe.
It makes me happy. It makes me want to go out there and help, because knowing that you can find turtle eggs and help protect them, it's really good.
School student Evan Smythe, ending that report by Jessica Schremer. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Nick Grimm.
Hi, I'm Andy Park with the ABC News Daily Podcast. Be alert, but not alarmed. If you lived through 9/11, you would have heard that saying on repeat. And by all reports, the terror hotline did work to prevent terror attacks. But what else actually works? The Prime Minister says new laws to tackle anti-Semitism will, including powers to deport so-called hate preachers and a new criminal charge for those advocating racial supremacy. Today, the Lowy Institute's Lydia Khalil on how to stop the next terror attack. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.